Hello, welcome back to Tech Unfiltered, and you are on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, streaming online at weft.org. Welcome back, everybody, on another episode of Tech Unfiltered. So today I'm going to actually be talking about something a little, actually pretty recent, is the Artemis II space mission, which in 45 years, that was the first time we ever went to the moon after the first time we went to the moon during the space race. So this is a monumental moment, not only for United States history, but world history, because we were able to circle the whole moon and look at places of the moon that we haven't seen before. Now, in order to achieve this monumental achievement, we needed to have specific technology, specific engineering that would help build this and help achieve this. So when people think about space missions, they often focus on, okay, I'm going to go to the moon, or I'm going to go to Mars, like Elon Musk wants to go to Mars. But from another perspective, the destination is only part of the story. The real challenge is building the system that can get there, survive the journey, and return safely. For example, when actually getting to the moon was not the hardest part of the journey in Artemis II. The hardest part of the journey was actually coming back down, because when a spacecraft like that comes back into Earth's atmosphere, it is so hot, like the outside is so hot, that without the necessary protection, the necessary materials, the people inside could be burned up. So this was definitely something that the people who were working on this mission really had to take into, because we don't want the people inside to burn up. So Artemis II was just so important. It was a full test of modern space engineering under conditions that have not been experienced by humans in decades. So at the center of the mission is the Space Launch System, often called the SLS. And SLS is one of the most powerful rockets ever built. So to understand why that matters, imagine trying to escape Earth's gravity. Gravity is not just a force you feel, it's something that you must overcome with enormous energy. So the rocket must generate enough thrust to lift its own weight, the spacecraft, the fuel, and cargo, and still accelerate upwards. SLS does this by using a combination of solid rocket boosters and liquid fuel engines. The solid booster provides an intense amount of thrust at launch. They burn quickly and deliver the initial push needed to leave the ground. It's basically like a big pogo stick. Like, basically, when you go down on the pogo stick, that's the amount of energy needs to go back up. So once they separate, the core stage continues the ascent using liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen. These fuels are extremely efficient and produce high energy when combined. So the engines at the base of this core stage are designed to operate with precision. They must maintain stability while controlling the direction and speed of the rocket. So this is not just about power, it's about control, because even a small deviation at launch can result in large error over distance. So guidance systems continually adjust the rocket's trajectory, sensors measure position, speed, and orientation. Computer processes this data in real time and makes correction. We can see that problems actually did happen in the Artemis II space mission. When they recently just went into orbit, they had a problem with their sewage system at the mission. And, you know, computers and sensors, they couldn't necessarily fix a sewage. So one of the astronauts on board actually had to fix that. So it's essentially like balancing something on a moving surface. Constant adjustments are required to stay on course. So once the rocket reaches space, another system takes over. And this is the spacecraft itself, called Orion. Orion is designed for deep space missions. It must operate independently for extended periods without external support. So inside Orion, everything is made for efficiency. Space is limited, so every component must serve a purpose. The structure is built to withstand both the forces of launch and the conditions of space. So, during launch, the spacecraft experiences intense vibrations and acceleration. And during spaceflight, it must handle extreme temperatures, like I was saying before. So, in sunlight, especially in sunlight, temperatures can become extremely high. And in shadow, they can drop dramatically. So thermal control systems manage this. These systems include insulation, reflective surfaces, and heat distribution mechanisms. They ensure that internal conditions remain stable. So another key system is propulsion. So once in space, Orion must be able to adjust its trajectory. And this is done using smaller engines that provide controlled bursts of thrust. These adjustments are critical. Because these adjustments are so critical, so let me like phrase it another way. These adjustments are critical because we don't want Orion to go off balance. Because as I was saying before about that moving system, one thing that goes wrong could cause so many other things to also go wrong. So they determine where the spacecraft reaches the correct path around the moon and returns safely to Earth. So it's basically like steering a vehicle, but instead of having a turning wheel, your fire thrusters need to thrust in the precise direction. So that is dangerous and that is scary as well. Each adjustment must be calculated correctly for that very reason. There's no room for trial and error. Communication is another major challenge. As a spacecraft moves farther from Earth, the signal takes longer to travel. So there is a delay. Commands sent from Earth do not arrive instantly. This means the spacecraft must be capable of operating with some degree of autonomy. So systems on board must handle routine operations without constant input. Communication systems have to use high-frequency radio waves to transmit data, and large antennas on Earth receive these signals. The data includes system status, environmental conditions, and other critical information. So this allows engineers to monitor the mission in real time, even from great distances. And power generation is handled through solar arrays. These arrays convert sunlight into electrical energy. So they are meant to unfold once the spacecraft is in space. So this increases their surface area and allows them to capture more energy. The energy generated is stored and distributed to all systems. Power management is essential, and every system depends on it. If power is lost, critical functions could fail. And that is why redundancy is built into the design. Redundancy means having backup systems, so if one component fails, another can take over. The principle is used through the spacecraft, and multiple systems perform similar functions to ensure reliability. So it's basically having multiple layers of protection. So one of the most important phases of the mission is re-entry, as I was talking about. Returning to the Earth is one of the most dangerous parts of spaceflight. So as the spaceflight enters the atmosphere, it experiences extreme heat, and this heat is caused by the compression of air in front of the spacecraft. Temperatures can reach thousands of degrees. So, to survive this, Orion uses a heat shield. The heat shield is made of materials to absorb and dissipate heat. It is designed to slow and wear away during re-entry. So this process is called ablation. It carries heat away from the spacecraft. So it's just another protective layer that sacrifices itself to keep the interior safe. Without it, the spacecraft could not survive the descent. And after re-entry, parachutes deploy to slow the spacecraft further. These parachutes are carefully made because they must open at the right time and withstand significant forces. So finally, as the spacecraft landed in the Atlantic Ocean, that's where a recovery team comes to retrieve it. So every step of this process is planned and tested. There's no single system that guarantees the success. So instead, The success depends on how all the systems work together. This integration is what defines modern space engineering, and each component is part of a larger system. And that system must function under conditions that cannot be fully replicated on Earth. And that is why missions like Artemis II are so important. They test not just individual technologies, but the interaction between them. They reveal how systems perform in real conditions, and they provide data that can be used to improve future designs. In many ways, Artemis II is not just about reaching the moon. It's about building the foundation for future missions. It's about developing systems that can be extended, adapted, and improved. These challenges are significant, but they are also opportunities. Each challenge leads to innovation, each solution advances to a field, and as these systems continue to evolve, they bring us closer to more complex missions, and not just returning to the moon, but going beyond it. So that is the role of how engineering was implemented into space exploration, and it turns these ideas into systems, it turns these goals into reality, and it makes something like Artemis II possible. So that's just a little overview of Artemis II. But as we go into the different segments, we're going to be talking a little bit about the life support or the survival mechanisms they have, and also just future space technologies and future space missions that they are thinking of doing. So before we go on to our quick music break, here is a quick PSA. In your local organization or nonprofit group has an upcoming event, workshop, information session, monthly meeting, or fundraiser, WEFT is here to help you spread the word. Just send the details in an email to psa@weft.org or bring a flyer or script to the station here on North Market Street in downtown Champaign. Helping the community is what WEFT is all about, so if we can help you, just let us know. So that is WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, streaming online at weft.org, and I will be back with the next segment. Hey, Eagle, hello, welcome back to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, streaming online at weft.org, and this is your host, Irvi Banerjee, on Tech Unfiltered. So, just before, we were talking about just how did they get up to the moon? And how did they do such a monument task and one of the challenges and tribulations that they experienced? So we were talking about how one of the difficult challenges wasn't just propulsion, navigation, or even distance. It was survival. So space is an environment that does not support human life in any natural way. There is no breathable air, no atmospheric pressure, extreme temperatures, and constant exposure to radiation. On Earth, these conditions are regulated automatically by the planet itself. In space, every one of these conditions must be engineered. This is where life support systems come in. Life support systems are the collections of technologies that allow humans to live and function in a spacecraft. They do not just provide oxygen. They create an artificial environment that replaces everything Earth normally provides. So, to understand how complex this is, let's say you're taking a small room, sealing it completely, and asking four people to live inside of it for days without opening the door. Every breath they take changes the air. Every movement produces heat. Every action consumes resources. Without constant management, that environment could quickly become uninhabitable. So a spacecraft is essentially that sealed room, but with far higher stakes. The system used in missions like Orion is called the Environmental Control and Life Support System, often shortened to ECLSS. This system is responsible for maintaining air quality, pressure, temperature, and water supply and waste management. One of the most critical functions is oxygen supply. Humans require a steady concentration of oxygen to survive. Too little oxygen leads to hypoxia, where the body cannot function properly. Too much oxygen can also be dangerous, increasing the risk of fire and affecting the body's chemistry. So in a spacecraft, oxygen is either stored in tanks or generated through chemical processes. The system must carefully regulate how oxygen is released into the cabin. Now, at the same time, carbon dioxide must be removed. Every time we exhale, we release carbon dioxide in a closed environment. CO2 levels can rise quickly, high concentrations can cause headaches, confusion, and eventually loss of consciousness. To prevent this, spacecraft use systems that capture and remove carbon dioxide from the air. On the International Space Station, for example, carbon dioxide is removed using systems that pass through materials that chemically bind with CO2. These materials are then processed to release the CO2 outside the spacecraft, or recycle it. This creates a continuous cycle of air management. Another major component is pressure control. On Earth, atmospheric pressure helps keep our bodies functioning normally. In space, there is no natural pressure, so the spacecraft must maintain it artificially. If pressure drops too low, it can lead to decompression, which is extremely dangerous. If pressure is too high, it can strain both the structure of the spacecraft and the human body. Engineers must design systems that maintain a stable internal pressure while also ensuring the structure can withstand external forces. Temperature control is equally important. Space is not simply cold, it's an environment of extremes. In direct sunlight, temperatures can become extremely high, and in shadow, they can drop dramatically. Without an atmosphere to distribute heat, temperature differences become more severe. Inside a spacecraft, both equipment and human activity generate heat. So if that heat is not managed, it can build up and damage systems. To control temperature, spacecraft use thermal regulation systems. These systems include insulation to prevent heat loss, radiators to release excess heat, and fluid loops that transfer heat away from sensitive components. So think of it like a cooling system in a car. The system moves heat away from where it's generated and releases it in a controlled way. Water is another critical resource. Humans need water, not only for drinking, but also for hygiene and food preparation. Carrying a large amount of water into space is inefficient because of weight constraints, so instead, spacecrafts use recycling systems. On the International Space Station, water recovery systems can recycle up to 90% of water used on board. This includes moisture from breath, sweat, even wastewater. So to understand how advanced this is, consider that water from multiple sources is collected, filtered, purified, and reused. It is a closed-loop system designed to minimize waste, so this kind of recycling is essential for long-duration missions. Waste management is another often overlooked but important part of life support. In space, waste cannot simply be discarded. Systems must collect, store, and sometimes process waste safely. So these systems must be reliable, hygienic, and as failures could create serious health risks. Now, beyond the physical environment, there's also biological challenges. One of the most significant is microgravity. In space, astronauts experience near weightlessness. This affects the human body in multiple ways. Muscles weaken because they're not used to support weight. Bones lose density over time. Fluids in the body shift, affecting circulation and even vision. To counter these effects, spacecraft include exercise systems. So astronauts on the International Space System spend about 2 hours a day exercising. This includes resistance training, cardiovascular workouts. So these systems are specifically designed for microgravity conditions. For example, resistance machines use vacuum or elastic systems instead of weights. This allows astronauts to stimulate the effects of gravity. So radiation is also another major concern. Outside of Earth's protective magnetic field, astronauts are exposed to higher levels of cosmic radiation. This radiation can damage cells, increase the risk of long-term health issues. So, spacecraft use shielding materials to reduce exposure. However, shielding alone cannot eliminate the risk. Mission duration and trajectory are also carefully planned to minimize exposure. For example, Artemis II is designed as a relatively short mission compared to the future deep space missions. So this allows engineers to test systems while limiting risk. Another important aspect is system redundancy. In space, there is no immediate external support. As I said before, if the system fails, there must be a backup. So critical systems are often duplicated to ensure that if one system fails, the other can take over. So this ensures that a single failure does not lead to complete loss. So this redundancy also applies to software. Control systems must be reliable and capable of handling unexpected situations. So they must process data from sensors, manage resources, and respond to changes in real time. Human factors are also an extremely important part of this challenge of getting to space. Astronauts must be able to operate systems efficiently. Controls must be intuitive. Information must be presented clearly. So in high-stress situations, clarity and simplicity can make a significant difference. Engineers study how humans interact with systems to design interfaces that support decision-making. This includes a layout of controls, display systems, and even lighting conditions. Physiological factors are also considered. Living in a confined space for extended periods of time can also affect mental health. Spacecraft design includes elements to support well-being. This might include lighting that mimics natural day or night cycles, communication systems to stay connected with Earth, and structured schedules. All of these elements are part of life support in a broader sense. They support not just physical survival, but overall function. One of the most important ideas in life support engineering is closed-loop systems. A closed-loop system is one where resources are reused rather than discarded. Air is recycled. Water is purified and reused. Water is managed efficiently. This reduces the need for a resupply and makes long-duration missions possible. For missions beyond the moon, such as Mars missions, closed-loop systems will be essential. Resupply from Earth would not be practical, especially when the spacecraft is at Mars. Everything needed for survival must be generated, recycled, or conserved. Current systems are not fully closed-loop. There are still losses. But ongoing research aims to improve efficiency and move closer to fully sustainable systems. Another area of development is automation. Life support systems must operate continuously. Automation allows systems to adjust conditions without constant human input. Sensors monitor air quality, temperature, and pressure, and other variables. Control systems respond automatically to maintain stability. This reduces workload for astronauts and increases reliability. However, manual control is still extremely important. A lot of people think that when the astronauts went up to space, all the machines did everything for them, and they essentially had to keep it working. But astronauts must be able to intervene if necessary. This balance between automation and human control is a key design consideration. As missions become more complex, life support systems will continue to evolve. They will need to support longer durations, larger crews, and more challenging environments. This includes not just the spacecraft, but also the habitats on other planetary surfaces. For example, future lunar bases will require life support systems that can operate for extended periods. These systems may use local resources, such as extracting water from lunar ice. So this approach is called in situ resource utilization. It reduces the need for transport resources from Earth. And it's another example how engineering is trying to adapt to these new challenges. In the end, life support systems are more about keeping astronauts alive. They're about creating a stable, controlled environment in a place where it doesn't really exist. They replace the natural systems of Earth with engineered systems. So every breath, every drop of water, and every degree of temperature is managed. And all of it must work continuously without failure. Because in space, there is no margin for error. So this is what makes life support one of the most critical areas of space engineering. It's not always visible. It doesn't really get anybody's attention. But it's the foundation that makes human space exploration possible. Without it, no mission could succeed. And as we look toward longer and more distant missions, the importance of these systems will only increase. And they will determine not just whether we can reach the new destinations that we really want to go to, such as Mars, but whether we can actually stay there. So that's just a little bit on some survival engineering. And on the next segment, we're going to be talking a little bit about some deep space engineering and what future missions we could be possibly doing. So before we go on to our segment, here's a quick PSA. Support for WEFT Radio comes from Urbana Arts and Culture, providing resources such as arts grants, artist opportunities, events, and other arts and cultural programming. Since 2008, the program fosters a city where all residents may engage with the arts and where artists thrive and are valued. The City of Urbana Arts and Culture program continues to celebrate Urbana's artistic and cultural diversity. More information can be found at urbanail.gov or on facebook.com/urbanapublicarts. So this is WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, streaming online at weft.org, and I will get back with you for the next segment. Hello, welcome back to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, streaming online at weft.org, and we are getting right back into space exploration and all that is within it. So before we were talking about getting to space, and then we were talking about surviving to space, and now we're just going to be talking something a little bit more ambitious. So staying in space longer, that's the ultimate goal. We want to travel further and build systems that do not depend entirely on Earth, because the next phase of space exploration is not just about missions, it's about infrastructure. So it's about creating systems that allow humans to operate continuously beyond Earth's orbit. And that requires new forms of innovation, especially in habits and resource systems. One of the biggest limitations in current space travel is propulsion. Traditional rockets rely on chemical propulsion. This means fuel is burned to create thrust. It is powerful, but inefficient over long distances. A large portion of a rocket mass is fuel, and that once that fuel is used, it can be reused. It cannot be reused. For missions like Artemis II, this approach works because the distance is relatively short in space terms. But for missions to Mars or beyond, new propulsion systems are being developed. One of the most promising is ion propulsion. Ion engines do not produce large bursts of thrust like chemical rockets. Instead, they produce a small but continuous force over a long period of time. They work by using electricity to accelerate charged particles and using ions of gas like xenon. These ions are expelled at extremely high speeds, creating thrust. To understand this, let's say you're pushing something gently, but you're pushing on it continuously. So over time, the steady push can move an object pretty far. So ion propulsion has also been used in missions such as Dawn spacecraft. Dawn traveled to multiple asteroids using the system. While the acceleration is slow, the efficiency is just much higher than chemical propulsion. So this makes it ideal for deep space missions. Another area of research is nuclear thermal propulsion. So instead of burning chemical fuel, this system uses a nuclear reactor to heat a propellant, such as hydrogen. The heated gas expands and is expelled to produce thrust. And because nuclear reactions release much more energy than chemical reactions, this system can provide higher efficiency. NASA and other organizations have been actively researching this technology for future missions. The advantage is that it could significantly reduce time travel in destinations like Mars. Shorter travel times means less exposure to radiation and fewer resource requirements. There's also research into nuclear electric propulsion. This combines nuclear power with electrical propulsion systems like ion engines, and the reactor generates electricity, which powers this propulsion system. So this allows for a long-duration missions with consistent thrust. These systems are still in development, but they represent a major shift in how spacecraft could travel. Another concept being explored is solar sails. So instead of using fuel, solar sails use the pressure of the sunlight to generate motion. Photons from the sun exert a small force when they hit a surface. So by using a large reflective sail, spacecraft can capture this force. The acceleration is extremely small, but like ion propulsion, it is continuous. Over long distances, it can become significant. The IKAROS demonstrated this concept successfully. This type of propulsion does not require fuel, making it attractive for long missions. However, it's limited by the distance from the sun. As the spacecraft moves farther away, the available energy decreases. Now, propulsion is only one part of the challenge. Once spacecraft reaches their destination, they need places for humans to live. And this brings back to habitat or survival engineering. Habitats are essential living spaces designed for space environments. They must provide protection, stability, and support for human activity. One approach is modular design. Instead of building a single large structure, habitats are made of smaller units that can be connected. So this allows for flexibility, and modules can be added, replaced, or configured. The International Space Station is an example of modular construction. It was assembled over time using multiple components. Future habitats may use similar approaches, but with more advanced materials. Another concept can be used with this. So, as we look into more things, we can look at a little bit about inflatable habitats. These structures are compact during launch and expand once in space. This allows for large living spaces without increasing launch size. The beam was tested on the ISS to evaluate this technology. Results showed that inflatable structures can provide effective protection and durability. They also offer advantages in terms of weight and storage. Radiation protection remains a major challenge for habitats. Unlike Earth, space does not have a magnetic field to deflect harmful radiation. Habitats must include shielding, so this can be done using specialized materials and by incorporating layers or other substances that absorb this radiation. So some designs propose using local materials. For example, on the moon or Mars, habitats could be covered with soil or rock to provide natural shielding. This reduces the need to transport materials from Earth. The idea is part of a broader concept, like I said before, which is called in-situ resource utilization. So this reduces the amount of material that must be launched. So NASA has already identified ice deposits in permanently shadowed regions of the moon. These findings support the feasibility of using local resources. Energy systems are also critical for future habitats. Solar power is commonly used, but it has limitations. So all in all, we're trying to find energy systems that would help us get to the places we want. So as of right now, we're researching about solar power, nuclear power, and many more. So as these missions extend beyond the moon, these considerations become more critical. All of these systems, propulsion, habitats, resource utilization, must work together. They're not independent. They form an integrated system. So this is what defines modern space engineering. It's not about individual technologies, but how these technologies interact. Each advancement builds on another. Improved propulsion enables longer missions. Resource utilization reduces dependence on Earth. Together, they create the foundation of a sustained presence in space. The transition from missions to infrastructure represents a major shift. So, instead of just isolated events or short visits, we are looking at something even more. So this requires a different approach, one that focuses on sustainability, adaptability, and resilience. And while many of these technologies are still in development, they are based on real research, real testing, and real progress. From ion propulsion systems already used in spacecraft, to expandable habitats tested in orbit, to resource mapping on the moon, these are not just ideas. They are steps towards a future where humans operate beyond Earth as a part of an extended system. This is where space technology is going today, and hopefully where it will go in the future. So that's just a little bit on Artemis II and all the space exploration and systems that go with it. This is the last segment, but before I go, I have a quick PSA. Soundbridge Foundation is a Champaign-Urbana-based nonprofit working to strengthen our local live music scene by supporting musicians, venues, and creative partners so that CU remains a vibrant, inclusive place for live music to thrive. You can help by donating. Your financial support fuels programs that create real opportunities for local artists and the spaces that support them. For more information on how you can help, search Soundbridge Foundation on Facebook. So that is Tech Unfiltered, and I hope you enjoyed it, and I will see you at the next episode.